Okay, I'm gonna go ahead and read the thing. Ella, how would you like a job that pays $30,000 to $45,000 a month? I know I would. But, you know, giving up all this glamour of podcasting. Well, I know you and I would both turn down the very rough and dedicated career of commercial saturation diving, wherein you have the tissues of your body brought to equilibrium with the inert components of your breathing gases, in essence, making your body able to survive at deep sea depths without requiring multiple decompression cycles to get back to the surface. Commercial saturation divers make the big bucks because they are in constant danger, keeping their bodies at depths at which humans are not meant to be for days or weeks at a time to do deep sea salvage, shipwreck exploration, or in today's case, working to maintain an oil rig. On November 5th of 1983, four saturation divers and one of their diving tenders were killed in one of the more gruesome possible ways. The only mercy is that it would have been quick. On this episode of Relative Disasters, the Byford Dolphin Explosive Decompression Incident. Welcome to Relative Disasters, the show where I peer into dark crevices, put what eldritch horrors I find there into a podcast, and send it out to my sister and anyone else who feels like listening. My much cooler big sister and I manage our existential dread by talking with each other about terrible and interesting historical events, their contexts, implications, and any related sidebars that tend to distract me. My name is Greg, my sister's name is Ella, and Ella, today we're going to be talking about something that's medically interesting, really gross, and truly heartbreaking. Our sources for this episode include the diving accident at Byford Dolphin on 5 November 1983, report of the expert commission from Norwegian Public Reports, an explosive decompression accident by J.C. Geertsen et al. For the American Journal of Forensic Medicine and Pathology of June 1988, history's worst diving accident by Gunnar Ringheim, published in Dagblad in March of 2008, the book North Sea Divers, A Requiem by Jim Limbrick, published in 2001, as well as other supplementary articles and interviews. The Byford Dolphin drilling rig was built in 1974. Then called the Deep Sea Driller, it was host to another loss of life when it ran aground in transit in 1976. Six people died when they fell out of their boats. It was renamed the Byford Dolphin in 1978 and remained in service until 2016. Its main drilling area was in various sectors of the North Sea, the stretch of ocean in the bowl between Britain and the European mainland up to Norway. The North Sea has some very rich oil fields, and it's a prime spot for deep sea drilling, and the Byford Dolphin had the equipment to do the drilling, able to hit depths of just over 6,000 meters, 20,000 feet. When it was built, it had the most advanced technology and safety measures, but those quickly were outpaced by new innovation. The rig was staffed by a maximum of 102 crew members. Six of those crew members were their saturation divers. Their job involved laying pipeline, keeping an eye on the mechanisms, and repairing things as needed, and inspecting the underwater components to ensure that nothing's going wrong at the extreme depths that no repair crew could reach in a timely manner. Now let's talk about decompression. As a human body descends through the ocean, the surrounding pressure from ocean water squeezes, and it squeezes so hard that it's literally squeezing every cell in your body. Nitrogen that's in your lungs gets compressed to the point where molecules of it get pushed through cell walls and into the bloodstream. While this may sound bad, it's actually fine, unless the diver then attempts to come back up. If you do it slowly, the body's processes will reabsorb the nitrogen or expel the nitrogen, and you'll be fine. If you go too fast, those minuscule bubbles of nitrogen will expand and become gaseous again. Just like any other bubble in the blood, this will give you a stroke, snap ligaments and muscles, paralyze you, and kill you in 50 different ways. There's a cure, though. We gotta get you into a hyperbaric chamber quickly, get your atmospheric pressure back up, and then slowly bring it back down to surface level. The best way to avoid rapid decompression is to ascend slowly. Stop every so often for a little while to allow the gases to be naturally absorbed or expelled, and then go up a little more. This is a process, depending on how far down you've gone, and it can take hours or even days. This is not what saturation divers do. The longer you stay down at extreme depths, and saturation divers are usually down at around 200 to 300 meters, around 700 to 1,000 feet, when you're down that far, bringing them up to the surface naturally would take days and a week or so to rest and recover fully. Since it's not economical for an oil company to send someone down for a few hours of work and then give them a week before you can send them down again, saturation divers instead spend their time in diving bells, which maintain an internal pressure and keep the diver's body saturated with nitrogen, hence the name. Once the diving bell is docked, they use a series of airlocks to transfer to the living chambers where they will live for their term of work. Up to 28 days is the industry standard. And the Byford Dolphin had a state-of-the-art, for 1974, setup. Two chambers that could bunk three people each, a dock and an airlock system for the diving bell, and an escape capsule housed at the end that could bring them up to the surface quickly in case of emergency. The standard saturated diving crew on the Byford Dolphin consisted of all six people, four divers and two tenders. The job of the tender is to oversee the umbilicals of the divers, the lines of air and communication that connects them back to the mothership. They supervise what the divers are doing and they stay in constant contact to guide the mission. Their job isn't done until the diver is back on board and the airlocks are cycled. At the time of the accident, the team on the Byford Dolphin consisted of two British divers, Edwin Cord and Roy Lucas, and two Norwegian divers, Bjorn Bergsen and Truel Helvik. The dive tenders were Martin Saunders and William Crammond, both British and both very experienced. At around 4 a.m., the diving bell with Helvik and Bergsen was winched into place, and Crammond had airlocked the two into their living chamber. The next step was to seal all doors to maintain the correct pressure and then detach the diving bell. Something went wrong. The diving bell detached before the doors were closed, causing explosive decompression. The living chambers were instantly decompressed from 9 atmospheres to 1 atmosphere. Air moved with enough force to jam the interior airlock door, yank one of the divers through that jammed interior airlock door, and smash both of the tenders that were clamping the bell with the diving bell itself, killing Crammond and injuring Saunders. Inside, Coward, Lucas, and Bergson were killed instantly in their beds, as their bodies reacted to the change in pressure the way that Diet Coke reacts to Mentos. Their autopsies would reveal that the fat in their bodies had been forced into their veins and arteries as the nitrogen gases shoved everything everywhere. Their blood had boiled. Their brains had multiple cystic actions from air bubbles. It was horrific. Helvik, however, was not killed by the bends. He had been moving toward the airlock door, and when the decompression hit, he was sucked out of the 60-centimeter, 24-inch door, tearing his body into pieces and mercifully killing him instantly as well. An investigation was launched, and they determined that the cause of the accident was human error. Their findings stated that Crammond had, for some unknown reason, opened the airlock door before the bell had been locked down. Despite his years of experience, despite knowing what would happen, he had just opened the clamp holding the bell in place because of being overworked or rushing or some other reason. This didn't sit well with the families of the diving crew. In 1982, regulations regarding the technological and safety requirements of deep-sea vessels had been changed to avoid just this. Newer airlock systems had a multiple interlock clamping mechanism, which made it impossible to open the clamp while the chamber was still under pressure. Thanks to lobbying efforts by the oil companies involved, existing drilling rigs were grandfathered out and not required to make those safety changes, though the investigation did recommend that those changes be made. They were under no legal obligation to do so. Former crew members of the Byford Dolphin came forward with claims that the investigation was a cover-up, alleging that the accident was due to faulty equipment, not human error, and that the dead could not defend themselves. In 2008, the North Sea Divers Alliance brought forward a report that laid the blame for the incident squarely at the feet of the faulty onboard equipment. Roy Lucas's daughter Claire spoke movingly during the investigation, stating that she believed that the Norwegian government had sent her father to die in a dangerous environment with unsafe equipment. In 2009, 26 years after the fact, a settlement was reached with the family of the divers. Today, deep sea saturation diving is comparatively safer. There are redundancies and multiple lock systems have been made standard so that a chamber cannot be open until pressurization is achieved. However, the Byford Dolphin was not quite through killing its workers. In 2002, a worker was struck by a piece of falling pipe and killed. The Byford Dolphin was finally taken out of service in 2016 and reportedly put up for scrap in 2019. And that's it. The story of the Byford Dolphin explosive decompression incident. Truly one of the more gory and horrifying incidents that we've covered here. Here at Relative Disasters, we make sure to fact-check our work to bring you the most accurate disasters possible. If you'd like to know more about our sources, they're cited at the beginning of the episode. Sometimes we do make mistakes, of course, so if you have any thoughts to share or corrections we need to know, please write to us at relative.disasters@gmail.com. We cannot respond to emails, but we do read every one. Or if you'd like to shame us publicly, and we know you do, why not try our Instagram, at relative.disasters. I want to thank Ben from Germany writing in to share his thoughts. This year so far has been a weird format change and a lot of extra work, so I'm glad that folks are still enjoying it. Your kind words and your critiques are certainly appreciated. Thank you, Ben. A big thank you also to our patrons who support us on Patreon. You guys are great and help us justify keeping this podcast ad-free. We'd like to thank our major disasters, Katie and Georgia, for their ongoing support. You guys are awesome. And this week's episode is brought to you by Ali Z, who only deep-sea dives with blue whales, and Suzanne, who would like to remind you that the ocean takes up the vast majority of the Earth's surface and is not carbonated, therefore the Earth is flat. Thank you all so much for joining us for this episode. I hope you've enjoyed the story, and I hope you'll join us again next week. Ella, next week we're going to tackle a disaster that killed nobody, but absolutely devastated the palates of wine drinkers throughout the world. On the next episode of Relative Disasters, the Great French Wine Blight of the mid-1800s. Have a good week. And I'll see you then.